Okay, we're beginning here, 7 lines from the bottom of Kuf Yod Aleph Amud Bet. The Gemara is continuing to discuss the question of how do we know that the husband inherits the wife? Gemara said of the Tanur Banan, we had a braita that said, Sheiro zo ishto, lamecha ba yoreshet ishto, that when it comes to the closest of kin, or the one that is closest, we saw that the word she'er referred to his wife. Because as the Pasuk says in Breshit, Vayu lebasar echad, and therefore ishto kegufo, and that's why we would say that she'er refers to his wife. And the Rishbam goes as far as to say that given that this is a chiddush that the husband should inherit, it's such a great chiddush that we would push him to the front of the list, and he would inherit even prior to the child of the deceased woman. And then, if you already say that a husband is akin to his wife, or is considered to be a she'er, that should be a bilateral limud, and that means that both the wife should inherit the husband should inherit the wife, meaning that they're considered to be guf echad. So the Gemara said about that, the Pasuk says, v'rashota, who yoreshota, that he inherits her, but she does not inherit him. And then the Gemara says, the psukim don't sound anything like that. You're taking clippings out of context from the psukim. So how are you coming up with this limud? And that's what we finished off with, the limudim of Abaye and Rava. Abaye had reworded the pasuk to make it into two pieces, where he said that you would read the pasuk in the following manner, im inachim le'aviv, unitatem et nachalato lakarov elav, that you would give the nachalah to the one who is closest to him, meaning that's the instruction that once you've exhausted the people mentioned in the parshia, then you go to the closest of kin. And then there'll be a second part of the pasuk, which is she'iro ve'arashota, that the she'iro, the husband, inherits her. And that's how you would read the pasuk. There'd be two pieces to the pasuk. You'd re-parse the pasuk in order to get that limud. On that, Rava said to Abaye, sakina harifa, you got this sharp knife and you're cutting up the pasuk like that? And then Rava offers up the alternative, which is gorin mosifim and dorshim, that you move around the letters in order to come up with a pasuk that reads in the following manner, which is, natatam nachalat she'ero lo, that you would give the nachala of his she'er, meaning his wife, to him. So the Rashbam already notes the problem that Rav was also cutting up the pasuk just like Abaye did. So then what was his question on Abaye? The Rashbam answers that Rav only moves around letters. He does not move around words. And therefore, it's not considered to be a sakina harifa. In addition, Rava keeps the pashtuta pasuk to be what the drusha is. He doesn't separate between the drusha and the pashtuta pasuk. His reading of the pasuk gives meaning to what the pasuk is, that it is the husband inheriting the wife. And then Abaye reparses the pasuk and divides it up into two pieces, where there's the pashtuta pasuk is that it goes to a close relative, and then the drusha, which is separate, is that the husband inherits the wife. So for that reason, Rava rejected Abaye's explanation, and offered up this alternative, which, again, is maybe not so simple, which also involves some maneuvering, but nevertheless, either it's less maneuvering, as the Rashbam says, it's only moving letters and not words. According to the Rimigash, you're keeping the Pshat HaPasuk intact with that one limud, whereas Abaye does both. He has a Pshat HaPasuk and a Drash on the Pasuk. And then the Rashbam also offers the alternative, which is Lav Dafka. He doesn't really mean to move around the letters over here. Dim Kane, Rava Nami Sakina Harifu, Ela Pashte de Gra, Iga de Frushe, Kilo Gorin Mosim Idorshim. The simple reading of the text is in the following manner, which is if you move the letters around, you'll understand how you should read the text, even though you don't need to move the letters around. So now we begin with the new bright. Detanyo, Vayarashota, Lamamej, Abal Yoreshetishto. Vayarashota teaches you that the husband inherits the wife, Divir Rabbi Akiva. The way the Rishbam explains it, that Rabbi Akiva is just giving you a shorthand for all the limudim that we just had before, which is Yavariyashota is the final part of that limud. So Rabbi Akiva is basically the author of the position that we saw before in the Braita, that Sheiro Zo Ishto, and then Vayarashota teaches us it's only a one-way street, not a two-way street. And then you have the explanations of Abaye Rava of how to explain that. So in shorthand, Rabbi Akiva is basically saying the drusha that we had until now, Vayarashota, that is the drusha that he is subscribing to. Rabbi Yishmael Omer, Eino Tzarich, you don't have to do all this fancy footwork. Harehu Omer, it's explicit in the pasuk from the context in which it is written. That is at the end of Sefer Bamidbar, when it speaks about the Bnot Tzlavchad, it says, "Bechol bat yoreshet nachala mimatot b'nei Yisrael," and then it goes on further to explain, "Le'achad mimishpachat matei aviyah ati Elisha," that she must marry someone from her father's shevet, "Leman yeshu b'nei Yisrael ish nachalat avutav," so that the nachalot stay together with the appropriate shevet. So, given the context of that pasuk, the imperative of the Bnot Tzlavchad, or a daughter of that generation, to marry someone from her own shevet, if she was an inheritor, shows you that the pasuk is makpid on the fact that you don't move nachala from the woman over to the family of the man. And so here you see two things. One is, first of all, the pasuk never warns the husband from marrying someone who's from a different shevet, which would imply that the Torah is not worried about the nachala moving from the husband to the wife, because otherwise there should be also an instruction that a husband shouldn't take someone from a different shevet. Number two is that the fact that the Torah is makpid, that the woman doesn't marry someone that is not from her shevet, that's also indicative of the fact that the Yusha will move. And now you could argue, which we'll see later on the Gemara will argue in this direction, that maybe that has to do with this child born of that wedlock, because the child born of that will follow the yichus of his father, and therefore she marries someone from a different shevet. We're not worried about the Yusha moving from her to her husband, we're worried about the fact that it'll move from her to her son, who is from a different shevet. But what you see here from the psukim is that there's no son that is mentioned. It simply mentions the fact that she shouldn't marry someone from another shevet, irrespective of whether they have children or not. So given that, Rabbi Shmuel thinks that that's a sufficient grounds to show that a husband must be inheriting his wife. That's why a woman can't marry a man from a different shevet when she's an inheritor. And number two is that the wife does not inherit the husband because there's no instruction against the husband marrying someone from a different shevet. Then he adds on, v'omer, of a number of additional psukim that are brought, the Gemara then will go back later on and discuss why did he need to bring these additional proofs to his statement. V'omer, and in addition to that, it says, v'lo tisov nachala livnei Yisrael mi matel mate. It also says that you may not have nachala move from one mateh to another mateh, from one shevet to another shevet amongst Bnei Yisrael. But Omer, in addition, it also has another puzzle. Let's yourself nachala mi mateh to mateh acher. You may not have the nachala move from one shevet to another shevet. Those are the psukim immediately preceding and after the pasuk that we just read before of Chol Bat Yereshet Nachala Mi Matot Bnei Yisrael. Pasuk preceding it is Lo Tisov Nachala Li Bnei Yisrael Mi Mateh Mateh Ki Ish Benachalat Mateh Utav Yidbeku Bnei Yisrael. And then the pasuk subsequent to it is Velo Tisov Nachala Mi Mateh Mateh Acher Ki Ish Benachalato Yidbeku Matot Bnei Yisrael. So those are an additional two psukim that Rabbi Shmuel brings. Ve'omer. And then he brings a pasuk, the last pasuk in Sefer Yoshua, which says, Ve'elazar ben Aaron mate, Ve'igbru oto b'givat Pinchas bino. He passed away, and they buried him in the Giv'ah, in the area, the land of Pinchas' son, Ashenitonlo behar Ephraim, that he had inherited or he had gotten in Har Ephraim. Ve'omer. And in addition to that, it brings another pasuk from Divrei Yamim, Perek Bet, where it speaks about Machir, and it says, V'char bach etzron el bat Machir, avi Gilad, v'hu lekacha, v'hu ben shishim shana, v'teh ledo et skuv. Uskuv holid et Yair, v'yilo esrim v'shalosh arim be'eretz Gilad. And skuv gives birth to Yair. And from the context of the pasuk, it seems that Yair owns 23 cities in Eretz HaGilad. And then Vayikach Geshur V'Aram et Chavot Yair mi Itam. Later on, a couple generations later, Geshur and Aram, who are the bordering nations there, reconquer that area from Yair, from Chavot Yair, et Kenat ve'benoteh shishim Yair kolel ebnei Machir avi Gilad. So a number of things indicate that the property belongs to Yair. First of all, it already in the previous book of the Pasuk says that Skuv is born. So if it belonged to Skuv, it should have been mentioned in the previous Pasuk. Over here it says Skuv olid et Yair. Then it tells you about the cities. So it's pretty clear that the cities belong to Yair. In addition, afterwards it says Vayikach Zur V'Aram et Chavot Yair. So the area is called Chavot Yair. So you see from that that also these cities belong to Yair. So here we have another Pasuk from Divrei Yamim that also seems to substantiate Rabbi Shmuel's position. How is it possible that Yair had property if Skuv didn't have property? Meaning that if you're talking about the generation that entered into Eretz Yisrael, the nachalot that they acquired were nachalot that were distributed by the Goral and by the Shvatim. So how is it possible that Yair has property that his father Skuv didn't have? That's how he would have inherited the property. Malameid. So what that would mean? Asa Yair Isha. Yair married a woman, Umeita. And she passed away, v'yarsha. And then he inherited her. So Yair married a woman and then inherited that woman. So there is property that came to him, not through his father, but rather through his spouse, through marriage. My v'omer. So now the Gemara goes back and now tries to understand how all of this is helpful. V'chi teima, if you want to say, b'sibat haben kakapid kra, that the pasuk is only worried about the transference of ownership of property when it comes to a son, meaning that the psukim that are warning against a woman marrying out of her shevet is not because of her husband, but because of the child born out of that wedlock will follow his father's shevet. And therefore, the mother's property or the mother's Yerusha will pass to her son, and that will cause a movement from Shevet to Shevet. So what you would think is that I brought you just the Pasuk of Chol Bat Yereshet Nachalam Mimatot Bnei Yisrael. Nechad Mishpachat Mateh Aviyah Tiyah Lisha, Laman Yerushu Bnei Yisrael Ish Nachalat Avutav. Just brought you that Pasuk. I always said the warning is she must marry someone from her Shevet in order that her son will be from her Shevet, and the Nachalah won't move out of her Shevet. Aval Bao Lo Yerit. But the husband does not inherit his wife. Tashma. I'll bring you another pasuk. It says, "V'lo tisov nachalah libnei Israel." Here it's probably quoted wrong the pasuk because it should be mateh el mateh. The nachalah should not move in bnei Israel from shevet to shevet. So now you have another pasuk saying the exact same thing. So what do you want to say? The reason that you have both psukim, one is a imperative and one is a negative commandment that you may not do. The imperative is that Chol Bat Yereshet Nachalah must marry someone from her father's Shevet. So that's an asay. Alav haba michlal asay is an asay. And then you have separately a lot asay, which is loti sov nachalah libnei Yisrael mimateh el mateh. So now you'll say one is a lotase, one's an ase. That's why I need both psukim. And they're both speaking about the restriction of property moving to a son born of a mixed shevet wedlock. Tashma. But then I have a third pasuk that says, v'lo tisov nachalah mimateh lemateh acher. I have another pasuk that brings a lotase. So why do I need two lotases if I already have an ase and a lotase? Now you're adding on another lotase that she can't marry someone from a different shevet because of the child born? That would be the problem. If you want to suggest, yes, they want you to violate an asay and two lavin, and that's why they're all written. They're all written about the same thing. We don't want her marrying out of her shevet because of the child born to that wedlock, but the husband's not an issue because the husband does not inherit his wife. Tashma. I'll bring you another proof to that. Now, before we go on to the next proof, the Balei HaTosafot are bothered by the fact that the Gemara over here is willing to entertain the fact that you have an essay and two lotases. Tosafot quotes from other places in Shas, which is Tema. Whenever we have an opportunity to be Doresh a Pasuk, we'll be Doresh the Pasuk rather than just add up additional negative precepts that associated with the same violation. So over here, we have an opportunity to use this for something else, which is the husband. To say that the husband inherits, and that's part of the restriction against marrying out of the Shevet is because of the problem of the husband. Yet the Gemara here is willing to entertain the possibility that it's all about the problem of the child born of that wedlock. And despite that fact, we're going to pile on Levin, and just another love and another love. So it's strange that the Gemara would entertain that. It's even stranger because later on in today's daf and into tomorrow's daf, the Gemara is actually going to say just the opposite. That there's no reason to have an additional lav, and that gives us the opportunity to learn out to bow and not bend because of the fact that there's a duplication of the lav. So you see the Gemara itself has alternate ways to learn this, and it assumes that you wouldn't double up the lavin. So Tosfot says the Gemara is just saying, even if you wanted to say over here that there were multiple lavs, I could still prove it from the upcoming psukim or the additional proofs that I have. On the other hand, people say that it's too big a chiddush to say that the husband inherits the wife. It's one thing to say a child would inherit his mother because they are blood relatives. The only relationship of kurva that is not a blood relationship when you're talking about the Shivat HaKrovim is the relationship of a husband and a wife. A spousal relationship is not a blood relationship, so it's the only artificial, we'll call it, relationship that brings kirva. So the fact that we don't darshan that may not be such a big deal. We'd rather give more lavin to say that it's restriction against the Yerusha passing to the son and then shifting shvatim, rather than to say that the husband inherits the wife, because that is such a big chiddush, or that would really be a change in how we view the whole parshia of inheritance, because the husband is not a blood relative. So the Gemara says, okay, Tashma, if you want to use those psukim that way, what's the alternatives now to learn it? Elazar ben Aaron mate. Then we have the pasuk at the end of Sefer Yoshua, which tells us that Elazar passed away, and then he was buried in Givat Pinchas Beno. How is it that Pinchas ended up with property, Givat Pinchas Beno? It's called the Givat Pinchas, if he didn't inherit the property from his father, Elazar. So it must have come through his deceased wife. And in that, we would have a proof that the Baal is Yoresh Ishto. The way that it actually happened is that Elazar married a woman, Umeita, and she passed away, Viarta Pinchas, and Pinchas inherited his mother. And so maybe you could talk your way out of this problem by Pinchas and say, how did Pinchas come into this property if it were not for the fact that he got it from his father Elazar? The only way would be because Pinchas married someone, she passed away, and that's how he came into possession of the property, even though it didn't come from his father Elazar. But it says, no, there's another alternative. Elazar married someone, and she passed away, and then the property passed to her son, Pinchas. And that's how Pinchas got it. He got it from the property of his mother, who had passed away. So Gemara says, Tashma. So even if you want to explain it that way, Uskuv olidet Yair. What are you going to do with the psukim in Divrei Yamim that Skuv gave birth to Yair? And then Yair had all this property. How did he get it if it didn't come from through his father? If you want to say there in Divrei Yamim, also it's a similar case to that which was by Pinchas. Hakihu. It's the same exact situation, which is that the Skuv married a woman, the woman passed away, and the property was inherited by Yair, her son. So again, the problem is the son and not the fact that the husband inherited. Mar says about that, Imkain, Trey Krai, Lamali. Why do you need two psukim to teach me the same thing? It's one thing in the Torah to have a duplication of the pasuk because it teaches you additional Navin. Once you reach the Navi, it's one thing to have one example in the Navi that's supportive of the Torah law. To have the two things repeated in the Navi that are supportive of what you think the Torah law is unnecessary. So it must be coming to teach you an additional chidush. That additional chidush would be that in the case of Pinchas, maybe he got it through his mother, who was married to Elazar, but in the case of Yair, he got it from his wife and not from his mother. And so what Rabbi Yishmael says is, if one by one you don't like my drashot, I have so many psukim that seem to all indicate the same thing, that by the time you get down to school, it's got to be that he's inheriting his wife, and that is the reason that he came into possession of this property. So Amar Lei, Rab Papa, Rabaye, Mimai. How do you know that that's true? Dilma, Lola, Memelecha, Bal, Lo Yarit. Maybe the husband never does inherit. Vikrai, Besibata, Ben, Kedeshaninan. And all the cases of the psukim are like we said before, the restriction is against a woman marrying out of her shevet, because of the child that is born out of that marriage will follow the father's shevet, and that will cause the mother's property to move to a different shevet. But Eino Achanami, when it comes to a husband and wife, the husband is not a rightful inheritor of his wife, via Yair. So then how did Yair come into property? We don't want a duplication of what was said by Elazar and Pinchas, that he inherited something from his mother. We know that already. The Zavin Mizavin. He bought it. He purchased the property. So the reason he had it was because his father was not wealthy. He was wealthy, and he ended up buying all of this property. And as the Rashbam explains over here, Elo Shro Shayir Meir Lanu. Just tell you about how wealthy he was. Kamo Shematzinu Barbe Mekomot Benevim. That many times in the Navi, we find these. The situations or circumstances where the Navi is trying to give us background or information about an individual in order to show their wealth or their tremendous authority or political power. Tells you how many wives they had, how many children they had, how many weddings they made, what they owned. So over here too, was telling us about how wealthy or how successful Yair was in conquering those areas of the Golan Babashan. But not to come and tell us any halakhic information. And then the Gemara continues and says, Pinchas Nami Dazavim Mizban. So Rapapa says, you can say the same thing about Pinchas as well. Can't prove anything from there as well, because Pinchas could also have purchased the property. And now you have a situation in which you have no proof from those Psukim and Navi, because the Psukim are speaking about children who purchased property. That's why they're in possession of the property, rather than the fact that they inherited it from their mothers, from their spouses, but rather it was just a simple story of they came upon some wealth and they purchased the property. So Abai says back to him, Amalei, Pinchas de Zavin Mizban lo Matzi Damart. At least with Yair and Seguv, I have to agree that it's possible that Yair bought the property. But by Pinchas, your question is invalid, because Zimkei Nitzay Tzadech Lezeret B'Yovel. Remember that once you have the Yovel cycling, if someone purchases property, then at the time of the Yovel, the property returned to its original owner. So if you say that Pinchas acquired the property, that's why it was called by his name, then in the Yovel, it's going to go back. And then you find a situation in which Elazar is buried in a property that's going to go back to the original owner. People only bury their meitim or make it into a familial burial plot when they own the property. It's a property of the Yerusha. He purchased property and now he's going to make it into the kever of his father. That means when the Yovel comes, his father's going to end up with some other shevet or whoever owns the original property. And that would be inappropriate. And for that reason, it can't be that Pinchas was a purchaser of the property. It has to be property of Yerusha. And that's why he buried his father Elazar there. Ela, Eman Danafale Misadech Haramim. So he says, all right, you're right. Maybe he couldn't have purchased the property, but there are other ways for Pinchas to come into possession of a property. Pinchas was a Kohen, and the Kohanim actually are beneficiaries of things that are given to Hekdesh. There's a machloket in the Gemara, Arachin, about Stam Charamim. When somebody makes something Cherem, does that mean Cherem la Kohanim? A Cherem to be given to the Kohanim, or Cherem la Hashem? But definitely, if he specifies that it's a Cherem la Kohanim, that it's something that's donated or given to the Kohanim, then the Kohanim get the property. So it's possible that Pinchas came into possession of the property because of the fact that it was given as a cherem lekohanim. The Rashbam offers another alternative, which is the possibility that somebody dedicated their steachuzah to Hekdesh, and we learned before that if he does not redeem it before the Yovel, on the Yovel it gets distributed to the Kohanim. So if that's the case, Pinchas also could have come into possession of the property because of the fact that somebody donated a steachuzah to Hekdesh, didn't redeem it, and now it's distributed to the Kohanim on the Yovel, and Pinchas then came into possession of the property that way. The Ramban rejects that explanation of the Rashbam because he says that the Yovel was not yet in cycle, and therefore the Yovel wouldn't have been relevant by the time that he had to bury his father Elazar. There's no way they had passed the Yovel, because remember, we have the 14 years of Kibush V'chiluk, and then you would have to add additional 50 years on top of that. That would have been 64 years after they already had come into Eretz Yisrael, and that was too much time, meaning that that would have to be before passing of Elazar, and the first Yovel is much later than the passing of Elazar. And therefore, that cannot be the explanation for how Pinchas came into possession of the property. Now, the Balei HaTosafot over here bring from the Rosh Mishnas that he doesn't understand why Rav Papa had to go in this direction to suggest that Pinchas actually came into the possession of the property through Charamim. All you have to say is that Pinchas got it from his mother or his mother's father, and that's how he inherited the land, and then Yair got it through purchase. Or, if you're just saying now that it's description about these individuals and the wealth that they came into, then why does it matter that there's a duplication over here? You could have easily said, just like by the case of Yair, he got it from his mother, so too Pinchas got it from his mother. And then again, you would have no proof to what Rabbi Shmuel is saying. Others ask, why is Rav Papa compelled to say that Pinchas got it through a cherem? Why doesn't he just say that Pinchas got it through his mother, and Yair got it through a purchase? So the answer to that question is the fact that the Pasuk in Divrei Hayamim calls it Chavot Yair. And given that, it's pretty clear that the property was actually the inheritance of Yair and the inheritance of Pinchas, and not something that had come through a purchase. So therefore, they reject this idea that you could say either of them purchased the property, but rather you have to suggest that they inherited it from their mothers, which is a fair way to explain it. Others ask, why isn't it the case that Pinchas and Yair were part of those that entered the land? And the land was nitchalka to those that entered into Eretz Yisrael. So Pinchas and Yair could have both entered into the land, and that's how they came into possession of the property. And that's what Taptos went on the Yomud asked, Tema the Rashba, Ila Bay Aretz Nitchalka Aretz, Amai Lo Yal Yair, Shlo Yal Skuv. Why couldn't Yair have property that he got that wasn't through his father, Skuv? There are others who want to prove that Yair was born after they already entered into Eretz Yisrael, and therefore he would not have been amongst those that are Nitchalka Aretz. On the other hand, you still have that question by Pinchas. But the truth is that could be answered because the Kohanim did not inherit the land. It wasn't the Bayei Aretz that inherited the land. Rather, they were given land amongst the Shvatim. They were given specific areas and cities amongst the Shvatim. And we don't find any land that was given in Har Ephraim that Pinchas would have come into possession of as one of the Bayei Aretz. So it has to be that he came into possession of this land after he entered into the land. And it's something that he got without his father's having possession of it. The only way for that to happen is either that it came through his mother or it came through his spouse. So at this point, what Rav Papa is pointing out is that we have no proof from these psukim and the Navi that it actually came through a spouse. Because you can explain in these cases that there were alternate means by which they came into possession of the property. It could be simply that they're explaining how wealthy these individuals are and that they inherited it from their mother. It could be that they purchased the property at least for Yair. It could be the fact that they inherited the property through their mother, but you don't have enough evidence over here to show that there was some sort of spousal inheritance that would be the proof for Rabbi Yishmael. And now the Gemara continues, and here there's a major machloket about the Girsa going forward, which impacts on how you read the Gemara. The Girsa of the Rashbam, which is the Girsa that's found in our Gemara, is Amar Abaye. Amar Abaye means that this is a totally new sugya. We just finished off. And Rav Papa basically undermined the position of Rabbi Shmuel that he brought from the Braita to prove his position that a Baal inherits his wife, and you can learn that out of the Psukim. You don't need the limud of Rabbi Akiva. And Rav Papa showed that the Psukim that he brings are not sufficient, even though, again, when the Gemara moves into tomorrow's daf, the Gemara will already indicate that the duplication of the Psukim is indicative of what Rabbi Shmuel is saying, even out the drush of Rabbi Akiva, and that would probably have to be the final answer to Rav Papa's statement, is that you can't say Shtei Lavin when you have the possibility of making one of them the Baal and one of them the Ben, and we'll see the Gemara how it deals with that. But that would be the end of the sugya, at least the first part, according to the Rashbam. And now we begin a separate issue, which is Amar Abaye. Abaye makes another statement or brings up a question, a fundamental question, not addressing Rav Papa. He says that he got this from the Rabbeinu Gershom, which is interesting because the Rabbeinu Gershom, at least that we have in front of us, says Amar Le Abaye Le Rav Papa, that Abaye here is still speaking to Rav Papa, and he is continuing the discussion as from before. And that's what the Balei Tosafot believe over here as well, that the Girsa of the Sfarim that say Amar Le Abaye is the proper way to have the Girsa over here. And this is a continuation of the dialogue between Rav Papa and Abaye. And Abaye is coming back to challenge Rav Papa's conclusion over here that it must be that you can't prove Yerushat HaBaal from these psukim. So Amar Abaye, sof, in the end, Hakamit Akra Nachala Mishifta De'ima L'Shifta De'Abel. In the end, even if you believe that there is no spousal inheritance, when you have a child that's going to inherit his mother, the solution of marrying someone from their own Shevet is not going to deal with the problem. And that is because you have a possibility that the woman who here is coming to get married is a product of a mixed Shevet marriage. There are a number of ways how that could have come about. The Rabbeinu Gershom suggests over here, Babagav de Nizgavgu Beheter, that they got together when it was mutar. Why? Because this woman had many brothers. So when she got married, she wasn't even in line for an inheritance. So that's why she could marry anyone she wants from any Shevet. There was no compelling reason for her to only have to marry within her Shevet. One by one, her brothers passed away. The inheritance then came to her when she was already married to someone from a different Shevet. So that's a possibility of how you could have it happen, Beheter. Others suggest that the Isur only starts once there is Nachala that's involved. It does not precede the point in which the Nachala is being distributed at the end of a Midbar. So anybody who's married before that point was married Beheter and doesn't need to worry about it. So you have a possibility that there is this marriage by which a daughter now will inherit. That daughter is married to someone from a different Shevet. And then that marriage to someone from the different Shevet produces a son from the Shevet of her husband. And then when that Yerusha passes from her mother to her, and then to her child, there will be a shifting of the Shevet. So even if she marries within her Shevet, it's not going to solve the problem. Because she could be inheriting her mother who was from a different Shevet. And now she's inheriting her mother from a different Shevet. And that property comes to her, and she married someone for her own Shevet. But her mother was from a different Shevet. So in the end, the property is going to move from Shevet to Shevet, even if a man and a woman marry within the same Shevet. Or in essence, what Abaye is saying is, if you explain that the whole problem here, or the whole reason to psukim of preventing a woman from marrying someone outside of her Shevet is because of the offspring of that marriage, then it's very possible that you haven't solved the problem, because you have land moving from Shevet to Shevet. On the other hand, if it is that the husband is inheriting the wife, and that's what you're trying to prevent, the movement of property from Shevet to Shevet, then marrying within your Shevet will solve the problem. And so what Abaye points out is, I don't understand. So Rabbeinu Gershom says over here, "V'lo matzinu lemebed takana besabat haben elishmamina de bal yarit ubesabat habal ika takana." It's only possible to prevent the problem if you're talking about a husband inheriting his wife. In that case, marrying into the same Shevet will solve the problem. If the problem is that the child born of those marriages will inherit, that will only prevent the problem when that marriage has a child from two spouses that married from the same family. But if the previous generation, her mother, came from a different Shevet, and now she inherits her mother from a different Shevet, the fact that she married within her own Shevet doesn't prevent them land from moving to another party. So that's Abaye's answer to Rav Papa, according to the Balei Tosafot and the Rabbeinu Gershom. You can't say that all these psukim are talking about Hasabat HaBen when it's obvious that that can't be solved completely. The only thing that can be solved completely is Hasabat HaBaal, and therefore that must be what it's speaking about. The Tosafot has a slightly more nuanced description than the Rabbeinu Gershom in simply saying that when it comes to Hasabat HaBaal, that is more tenable because of the fact that if she marries someone who's identical to her, then there's no more akira from her marriage to this individual than there was before. When it came from her mother to her, she already has a shift in Shevet. Similarly, when she marries her husband and it moves to her husband, who's of a similar ilk, we'll see later, then there's also no more movement of the Yerusha than has happened already. Even though the product of their marriage, the son, of that marriage is completely from the shevet of the mother and the father, nevertheless, that's something in the future. But whatever we can do to prevent movement, we will do. And in that way, when the pasuk is telling you, you've got to marry within the shevet, you're doing something that prevents an additional movement of property. On the other hand, when you're talking about the child, when the child inherits from his mother, marrying within the shevet is no more preventative than marrying someone from a different shevet. Because either way, the property is going to move to the son, who's completely from a different shevet. Because even if she marries someone from her own shevet, it's going to move the property away from the shevet of her mother when it goes down to her son. And so therefore, you'd be more favorably inclined to say that it's talking about b'sibata bal than b'sibata ben. And the reason being, the Balei Tosfot say over here, ain't svara lomar, shelo ikpida ketuv v'nachlat ha'im. There's no svara to say that the pasuk doesn't worry about nachlat ha'im, afu pi shekvar uzba. Even if it's already moved, the kevan dechtiv yushat shnei matot, mashu v'delachlat ha'im avdina namita kanta. That by the nachlat ha'im, we also do something to rectify the situation. And then the continuing conversation here between Abai and Rav Papa is saying whether it's more likely to be that the psukim are speaking about sibat ha'bal, or is it equally likely that it's speaking about Sibata Ben? If that's the case, we would favor saying Sibata Ben over Sibata Baal. And the Rashbam sees this as Abai asking a global question, independent of what happened before in the Limud of Rabbi Shmuel, but a question in general, which is, if we can't explain the Braita of Rabbi Shmuel, but we also can't now explain the Psukim, because the Psukim are trying to prevent the Nachla moving from Shevet to Shevet, and that doesn't happen because of the fact that the marrying of a spouse from the same Shevet does not solve the problem, even though it may solve the problem of Yerushat HaBaal, doesn't solve the problem of Yerushat HaBen. So it's just a more generic question, which is, yes, there's Yerushat HaBaal and Yerushat HaBen, but we're still left with the problem, which is, by Yerushat HaBen, it will still happen that it will move from Shevet to Shevet. So as the Rabbeinu Gershom, the Balei Tosfot, see this as a continuation, as a response to Rav Papa, to say, I'll give you everything you said until now, and say everything's talking about your B'sibat HaBen, that's going to run you into a problem, which is that you won't solve that problem. On the other hand, the Rashbam just sees it as a more generic question. How are we going to deal with the fact that these psukim don't solve the problem that they're out to solve? So now, according to the Rabbeinu Gershom and the Balei Tosafot, it's Rav Papa responding to Abaye. We could see this in the Rabbeinu Gershom. It's now Amrle Rav Papa lo Abaye. Rav Papa now says to Abaye, Umimai. How do you know that's the case? V'doma shani otam shvar husba. Maybe over there, it already moved from Shevet to Shevet. And since it moved from Shevet to Shevet already, that it's not a problem for this woman to get married because she isn't the cause of the transference. It is something that was almost predetermined before she ever got married. Which is, if she inherits property from her mother, who came from a different shevet, the cause of the transference and ownership has nothing to do with her personal marriage. It has to do with the fact that her mother married someone out of their shevet. Her mother was married in a case that was mutar, but the transference of ownership was caused at that point in time. It's her mother's marriage that is causing the problem, not her marriage. Once her mother married someone outside of the Shevet, then by definition, when the property falls to this woman, it's already going to leave the Shevet because she is connected to her father's Shevet. If she's connected to her father's Shevet, you've already had that transference taken place. Now that transference took place when she then gives it to whether it's her husband or to her son. That's not a new transference. It's just a continuation of already was set in motion before that point in time. So Rav Papa says, I don't see that as being a question because here, you can't solve the problem, you're right, but the problem doesn't, in essence, really exist, because the cause of the transference of ownership is not from her marriage currently, it's from her mother's marriage. Her mother's marriage was already done way before she got married, and therefore it shouldn't be a problem. So now, here you have different versions of the Girsaot here, depending on what you think. According to the Balei Tosafot and the Rabbeinu Gershom, it is now Amrle, which is that Abai is now responding back to Rav Papa, Shvar Husba Lo Amrinan. We don't say that. We'll see in a second what that means. On the other hand, for the way that the Rashbam learns is a vidilma shekvar uzba lo amrinan. Abai is besafek as to whether we say that or not. He's not saying definitively that we don't say it, but rather he's saying that we don't know if we say it. Because again, it's not in a discussion with Rav Papa, but rather Abai trying to deal with the situation as a whole. Now, what he is saying, and the Rashbam points this out, is that Abai does have a solution to the problem of kvar huzba. Having that in mind, Abai is now presenting what he thinks Ishkavar Husba is not an issue. And that is because if you have a solution, how can you go ahead and say that Kvar Husba, that it's already gone? If you have a solution, that means that there's a better way to deal with this than just saying everything's happened already. In addition, first of all, if the mother is still alive, how can you claim that Husba Kvar, that it already moved? It hasn't moved yet because her mother's still alive and the property hasn't moved Shvatim yet until it passes to the daughter. In addition, the Ramban suggests that there's two different issues here. What happened in the past is what happened. But in the future, we can do something to at least rectify or do the best to solve the problem that we have at hand. So yes, in the past, something moved or something changed. But why should we continue that process? Or why should we put accelerant on it to ensure that it moves to the other Shevet? Why don't we do whatever we can to prevent that movement from Shevet to Shevet? And therefore, the Kvar Husba lo Amrina, and we want her to marry someone of a similar ilk so that it doesn't happen. Amalei Rav Yemer, the Ravashi, Iyamart Bishlama Shekvar Husba. If you say that Kvar Husba means that the determination was already made from the mother's marriage, that the property was going to move Shvatim, then you can explain the Psukim as being both a restriction against the woman marrying into a different Shevet because her husband will inherit her, possibly, or because her son will inherit her, and if she marries to a different Shevet, she will be the cause of that problem. The property she gets from her mother, that was something that preceded her, has nothing to do with her marriage as to the fact that it moves. If you do not say that the fact that when her mother married already to a different Shevet, that's what caused the transference of the ownership, and this woman doesn't need to marry about it, how does that help her? When she marries someone from her own Shevet, it doesn't do anything. Because then the Nachla is going to move from her mother's Shevet to the father's Shevet, irrespective of who she marries, because her mother married someone outside of her Shevet. So in Elchanami, this sounds like exactly the same question that was asked before by Abaye, and that's what the Rimigash says. It's a repetition of the same question that we saw before, whereas the Rashbam over here presents it as the following. He said before Vidilma that Abaye thought maybe we don't take Kvar Husba, and Rav Yemer is coming to say, how could Abaye have a safek about this? Because his safek would not allow us to explain the situation of the psukim. So that's what his question is. His question is, how could Abaye ever come across that safek? Whereas according to the Balei HaTosafot, who say that this is a continuation of this questioning cycle between Abaye and Rav Papa, what he's saying is, if Abaye says, Kvar Husba lo Amrinan, then what is Abaye done to disprove Rav Papa? In the end, he has no reason to believe that the marrying of the same Shevet solves the problem of the Baal more than it solves the problem of the Ben. Because if you don't say Kvar Husba, then there's still a problem that exists, and the woman shouldn't be able to marry out of her Shevet, even if it's only that the son inherits her, not her husband that inherits her, because it could be a problem that's coming through her mother, and not necessarily through herself or her own personal inheritance from her father. And therefore, you would have equally good reason to have them marry within the Shevet, whether it was for the husband or whether it was for the son. And again, then Abaye is left not helping out Rabbi Shmuel, because Rabbi Shmuel needs it to be a proof to the fact that we must say that there is Hasabat Abal, that there is an inheritance of the husband in these situations. And as the Balei Tosafot point out, Rav Yemer lo Yodea da Abaye ki ava muki lekra b'sibat Abal mefresh lekra, that Rav Yemer didn't know that Abaye had a way by the Hasabat Abal to explain the Pasuk that would avoid the problem. D'mesavinan le'gavra davui mishifta davua v'yimei mishifta d'yimei. Because as we're going to see in a second, Abaye does have a solution to that problem. And in using that solution, he avoids the problem that is raised by Rav Yemer as to why Hasabat Abal, marrying within the Shevet, will solve your problem. So the Gemara says, Dimansina la de gavra davui mishifta davua, vimei mishifta deimei. So what they're going to do is marry her off to a man who has the exact same makeup as the wife. So let's say that the wife had a father from Reuven and a mother from Shimon. Then we're going to find her a husband who has the same thing where the father is from Reuven and the mother is from Shimon. That way, when the woman inherits from her mother, that is from Shevet Shimon, then she's going to be marrying a guy who's also a product of a mixed Shevet marriage where his father is from Reuven, his mother is from Shimon. Now, in all technicality, you really didn't solve anything with this solution that is brought by Abaye over here. Because in the end, the child born of that marriage will be a part of Shevet Reuven. Because this husband who was born from a father from Reuven and a mother from Shimon is part of Shevet Reuven. And now when he marries this woman, who is also a product of a marriage of a man from Reuven and a woman from Shimon, the child born of their marriage will be in Reuven. And therefore the Nachala will get moved over in the end. Despite that fact, the Rimigash says the person or that child, even though he is part of Shevet Reuven, embedded in him is this similar makeup as it would be for the woman who is inheriting from her mother from Shevet Shimon. So in Hanami, in the end, the Nachala will move, but the Torah is only makpid that it doesn't move in a way that is different than the makeup of where it came from. So over here, where this woman is a product of Reuven and Shimon, if you could find a man who's also a product of Reuven and Shimon, then we'd be fine with that. Even though in the end, the offspring of their marriage will result in it shifting to Shevet Reuven from Shevet Shimon, despite that fact, we're okay with that because this husband and wife both came from a similar background. And therefore, if the husband inherits the wife, that hasabat of the Yerusha will not be considered to be a hasavah, a movement up from Shevet to Shevet, because he is a product of a similar makeup as his wife is. And for that reason now, Abai says, despite what Rabbi Yemar says, you say, Kvar Huzva Lo Amrinan, how do you have a marriage to the same Shevet solving the problem? The answer is yes. If you have someone married who has the same Shevet, the same makeup of parents from those different Shvatim. So yes, they will be from quote-unquote the same Shevet, but not the same Shevet in the absolute sense, but the same makeup of Shvatim. Their parents will come from that same makeup. Where it says, Yehoki, Hi le'echad mi'mishpachat matei avia v'imami ba'ilei. Then the pasuk should have read, instead of saying that yes, she has to marry someone from the family of her father, it should say that she has to marry le'echad mi'mishpachat matei avia v'imati alisha. That she has to marry someone who has the same makeup of the shvatim of her father and her mother. Ikdi v'achi, if it had written avia v'ima, hava minu afilu ipcha. I would have thought even if he has the opposite setup, it would be fine. Meaning that if her father was from Reuven and her mother was from Shimon, then the husband could have the opposite way around, where his father is from Shimon and his mother is from Reuven. That would work. Kamash Malan, so the pasuk says, no, it's got to be the Echad Mishpachat Mateh Aviyah. It's got to match up. It's got to be the same Mateh that she has her father from, he has to have his father from. So even though they're both products of a mixed Shevet marriage, they have to have the same makeup, which is the father from Reuven and the mother from Shimon. You can't have it flipped around, even though we're just trying to get them into a position by which they will have a similar makeup and it won't be considered hasabat nachala. And again, as the Rimigash noted before, there is hasabat nachala because in the end it does move from Shevet to Shevet. Despite that fact, because this person comprises a product of a mixed Shevet marriage, that's not considered to be hasabat nachala because it's the closest thing we could find to what this woman's makeup is. Her husband has that same makeup, and therefore it's not considered to be a sabat nachala. And that's how Abaye will deal with that question. The Bali and Osavo don't like the Rashbam's explanation for a number of reasons, amongst which are, first of all, ain't shitata gemara. This is not a normal way for the gemara to work. The Rapapa actually Abaye Braita. Abaye lo mahadir mide. Abaye never answers the question. Rapapa basically ends up undermining the Braita of Rabbi Shmuel. And then Abaye just walks away from it. His Rebbe Abaye doesn't deal with it at all. And then he all of a sudden comes up with his own question immediately after that. That doesn't seem to be the flow of the Gemara. And therefore, the Bali Tosafot are favorably disposed to say that this is a continuation of the previous discussion. Vo, de mesik Abaye, shekvar husba lo amrinan. And then Abaye says afterwards, shekvar husba lo amrinan. And over there it says amarlei, which seems to be that Abaye is responding in a definitive manner to Rav Papa. And the way that the Rashbam's reading this is a new question of Abaye, and Abaye's uncertainty is what leads to the question. And therefore, it should have read, Bedilma kvar husba lo amrinan. That should have been the Girsa of the Gemara. But Shein Hochanami, we pointed out before, the Bach says that is the Girsa of the Gemara according to the Rashbam. But the Bali Tosafot are bothered by the fact that they don't find any Ketveyad that have that Girsa in it. And for that reason, they reject this view of the Rashbam, that this is a totally new conversation, but rather see this as a continuation of the previous discussion. And in the end, the Abaye solution over here is to say that there is a possibility of preventative measures when it comes to Hasabat Baal. So Brother Rashbam, this is explaining the questioning of Abaye. According to the Bali Tosafot, this is actually being a conclusion as to the explanation of the Braita of Rabbi Ishmael, which is, how did Rabbi Ishmael learn out Hasabat Baal over here? The answer is because you have two psukim. One talking about Hasabat Ben, one talking about Hasabat Baal, and it is relevant that you can protect against these problems by demanding that she marry someone from her Shevet, not literally again from her Shevet, but someone who has the same parent makeup as she did, And then that way you can solve the problem, and that will be the extraneous pasuk, which we're going to see in the next two brightot that are coming up. That is the way that Rabbi Shmuel is going to have to learn the fact that there is a Sabbat HaBao and not just a Sabbat HaBen. So now the Gemara continues and says, Tanya b'sibata ben, v'tanya b'sibata bal. We have a braita that speaks about moving property to the son, a son inheriting his mother, and we have another braita talking about the husband inheriting his wife. And the Gemara brings down the way that the Bach says here, Tanya b'sibata ben is left out over here, it's not part of the Gemara. And now the way that we have the braita written in our Gemara is the version of the Rashbam, which is the Rashbam reads in the following manner, V'loti sob nachla v'nisrael mi matel matel. It says that you may not move nachalot from one shevet to another shevet. Bisibata ben akatu midaber. That's speaking about a son inheriting his mother. Ataomer bisibata ben o enelo bisibata bao. How do you know it's talking about a son? Maybe it's talking about the husband. Kishuomer, when it says later on the pasuk velo tisov nachalami matay al matay acher, hare bisibata bao amor. There already, it's said that the sibata bao is already taken care of by that latter pasuk. So then, what do I do with that first pasuk that says that you can't have it move from mate mate? It must be speaking about sibata ben. So the duplication of the pasukim makes it that first pasuk must be speaking about sibata ben, and the second pasuk we know for sure is talking about sibata bal. Tanya idach, here's the alternate braita, which is velotisov nachalami mate mate acher. The second pasuk that we bring b'misibata balakadu medaber. That's speaking about the husband inheriting his wife. Ataomer b'sibata bal. You say it's talking about the husband inheriting his wife. Oeno el b'sibata ben. Or maybe it's speaking about the son inheriting his mother. Kishu omer. When the pasuk says, v'lo tisov nachalav v'nei somi matei al matei, the earlier pasuk that says that, haria sibata ben amur, that already takes care of the son. Ha amani mikayem. So then what do I do with the pasuk, the latter pasuk that says, v'lo tisov nachalav mi matei al matei acher? B'sibata bal, akadu midaber. Speaking about the sibata bal, that the husband inherits his wife. Now, according to the Rashbam, the Braitot in the end end up saying the exact same thing, which is that the Braita says that the first pasuk is talking about a son inheriting his mother, and the second pasuk is speaking about a husband inheriting his wife. The only difference is how they approach it. And that will be the question of the upcoming Gemara, which is, Kulei Alma, Miyad Mimatei Lamatei Acher B'Sibata Bala Kaduv Midaber. The upcoming Gemara is going to say, they both agree that the latter pasuk is talking about Sibata Bal. And then the Gemara wants to know, my mashma, how do you know that's the case? According to the Rashbam, that's only a question on the first Braita. Because out of the two inheritors over here, the son and the husband, it's much more obvious that the son should inherit his mother rather than the husband inherit his wife. The son inheriting the mother, again, is a blood relationship that makes a lot of sense. And therefore, it's something that that's the way you would have first explained the pasuk. It's the lesser of the chidush to explain the pasuk. The second braita that assumes the first pasuk is talking about the ben makes sense. And it's trying to figure out what the second pasuk is speaking about. In the second pasuk, it says, it's talking about the bal. So that makes sense because he gave the lesser chidush first. Now I have an extraneous pasuk that's going for the bal. The problem is for the first braita, which starts out that the second pasuk for sure is talking about the bal. Therefore, the first pasuk must be speaking about the ben. Wait a minute, how do you know the second pasuk is talking about the Baal? That's a bigger chiddush. Why would you have started there? And that's the nature of the question according to the Rashbam. But otherwise, as the Rashbam says over here, there's no difference between these two braitot. It's mashmaut dorshim. There's just a difference in the nature of their drasha. But they both come to the same conclusion. And as far as what they saw in Rabbi Shmuel before, where the Gemara was saying possibly that those two psukim would be both for the same lav for Hasabata ben, he says, "V'svira le lahaytana k'damrinim ba'alma." This tana holds like we do in general. Wherever you have an opportunity to be doresh multiple items rather than just stack up lavin or negative precepts, we are doresh more broadly rather than just stacking up lavin on the same isur. And so they reject that understanding of the Gemara before, and they lay it out this way, each one coming at its own approach, and then the Gemara is going to say, so they agree about what the psukim are saying, but on the first braita, how does he know for sure that the second pasuk is talking about the bal? On the other hand, the Rabbeinu Tam disagrees with his older brother, the Rashbam, and says that that's not the right girsa in the Gemara over here. And he says that the braita that says it's speaking about sibata bal has the following language in it, which is, Tanya b'sibata bal, lo tisov nachala livnei somi mate el mate. The first pasuk, is that speaking about the bal, or is that speaking about the ben? So the Gemara says, I don't know which one it is, but I know the second pasuk when it says, "Kishu omer lo tisov nachalami matel matel acher ibisibata bal." That pasuk is definitely talking about the Baal, and we'll see that in tomorrow's Gemara, how he knows that. So then, Kamo Zebisibat Baal, Gam Zebisibat Baal. Just like the second pasuk is talking about the Sibat Baal, so too the first pasuk is talking about Sibat Baal. And that is the second braita, which is Sibat Baal. The first braita, which is called Sibat Ben, that learns differently and says, if the second pasuk is already talking about Sibat Baal, then the first pasuk must be speaking about Sibat Ben. And therefore, the first braita says the first pasuk is speaking about Sibat Ben, and the second pasuk is talking about Sibat Baal. Whereas the second braita says both psukim are talking about Sibat Baal, and nothing is talking about Sibat Ben in these psukim. And for that reason, there is now a big difference between these braitot, because one of them only has Sibat Baal, and he doesn't have Sibat Ben. The other one says, no, one pasuk for Sibat Baal, and one for Sibat Ben. And then the Gemara says, the Kuli Alma. Everybody agrees that the second pasuk is speaking about Sibat Baal. That's because that's the common denominator between the braitot. For the Reshbam, both of them agree that the second pasuk is talking about Sibat Baal, and the first one is speaking about Sibat Ben. How come the Gemara doesn't say Kuli Alma that the first one's speaking about Sibat Ben? The Reshbam, as an aside, explains the fact that that's not a Chiddush. And that's why the Gemara didn't have to say that. It's only that the second pasuk is talking about Sibat Baal that is the Chiddush, and therefore that's why it's asking that question. But for the Rabbeinu Tam, that was enough of a reason to say that the only agreeable point between these two braitot is that the second pasuk is talking about Sibat Baal. But the first pasuk, that's the machlok between the braitot, that one of them says it's talking about Sibat Baal, and that's Tanya like Sibat Baal. And the other braita is saying, no, if you already have Sibat Baal in the second pasuk, then the first pasuk is talking about Sibat Ben. And that's why it calls one of them Tanya b'Sibat Baal, because that one only uses it for Sibat Baal, and the other one's Tanya b'Sibat Ben, because he uses one of the Sukkim for Sibat Ben. For the Rashbam, both of them say Sibat Baal and Sibat Ben. The only difference between them is what they start with, and they're calling the braita based on what they start with. Rabbeinu Tam says that's not a way to define a braita by which pasuk they start with. Rather, it's determining what the conclusion of the braita is, and that's the difference between Tanya b'Sibat Baal versus Tanya b'Sibat Ben. And you can see a similar version in the Rabbeinu Gershom, V'hai lishna ikal mashma ben b'Sibat Ben ben b'Sibat Baal, abo b'idach lishna lek l'mashmina ki im b'Sibat Baal l'chud. So that one braita says Sibat Ben and Sibat Baal, and the other braita says Sibat Baal, and that's it. And both braita would be against what Rabbi Yishmael had said before, that the both psukim, you could have suggested we're speaking about Sibat Ben. Because over here, it's either both of them are Sibat Baal, or one Sibat Baal, one Sibat Ben. Nobody thinks that both psukim are speaking about Sibat Ben. Okay, we're going to stop here, 9 lines down, on the top of Kuf Yud Gimel, Amud Aleph.